The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey folks, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase Item of the Week. If the Twitter toddler in the White House has you completely stressed out, head on over to BubbleGenius.com and pick up their exclusive Republican voodoo doll featuring the face and body of our cartoon dictator. This item is only available for a limited time, so get yours now, only $25 at BubbleGenius.com, with a third of the proceeds going to support the campaigns of resistance candidates across the country. Plus, if you use our promo code BOBC at checkout, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Not mother?
No, Ruprecht, she's not our mother.
May I take your trident, sir?
Yes.
Now, Diana, as you were saying, you don't think the poor should be allowed in museums?
I think the
Ruprecht,
poor...
don't take the cork off the fork.
Why is the cork on the fork?
To prevent him hurting himself and others. Ruprecht, eat your applesauce. Ruprecht, we have wonderful news. Diana and I are going to be married, and we are all going to live in Palm Beach.
Ruprecht!
Bob Seska!
Today's Rachel Maddow Show Award for Headline Excellence goes to Bob Seska.
The Bob Seska Show!
Eat shit, Bob! God damn it! Hello, Bob.
It is Tuesday, June 27, 2017, and this is the Bob Seska Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. I am Bob, and we're brought to you by the best soap in the world. It is BubbleGenius.com. We're also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. If you want free legal advice, head over to thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez, or just click the link on the podcast page. Why don't you? All right, so let's bring in Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
May I take your trident, sir?
Buzz, I understand you don't like the poor to be allowed in museums, I heard.
No, I disapprove of that. And of course, I'm in favor of denying them health care. So
that's right. Yeah. Well, we've got really good news. I wanted to bring you in right off the top here, Buzz, because evidently, from what I understand, Mitch McConnell just announced that he's delaying the vote on Trump Care until after the July 4th recess, which is
good.
Is great for so many reasons.
Yes.
The main one being that that everyone is going to assault the members of the Senate and of course, members of Congress as well throughout the recess. So all of those.
Absolutely. And the protesters, as you know, already include disabled people, people in wheelchairs who turned out at Mitch McConnell's office.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell being a guy whose polio was treated by a government program when he was a child.
Yeah. March of Dimes, in fact.
Exactly. March of Dimes. And now he refuses to meet with the March of Dimes, even. These people who saved him from polio refuses to meet with them about this health care bill. This is a victory for another reason, Bob, besides giving people a chance to speak up more than they already have, which is pretty tremendous.
Right.
It's also a defeat for the strategy, which was to keep this secret, release it, and vote on it quickly.
Yeah.
And that just didn't pan out. They're so far off the mark in terms of the number of votes they need. So close and yet so far away.
Yeah.
That you're right. This extra time not only gives people a chance to speak up, but gives them extra time to do it, and it screws up that whole strategy of trying to rush it through.
And you know, I'm wondering how smart that strategy actually was. I mean, did Mitch McConnell really think that he was going to get all the way up to a vote without people finding out how much of a disaster that this Trump Care bill actually is?
I don't know.
I mean, how could he get that? Could he possibly think that this was going to be a win for him,
it's
knowing
be over,
what was in it?
got to be overconfidence. It's, you know, Mitch McConnell is very, very smart, very politically savvy. Smart when it comes to jockeying with Congress.
Yeah.
He's very smart in that way. One of the smartest guys in Washington when it comes to manipulating and dealing with tough issues in Congress. So I think he expected to have less opposition, especially since they'd, you know, since they kept it secret, and then he thought, well, just because they're Republican, they'll go along with it, and that didn't work out for him. He was trying to learn from the lesson they learned in the House, is don't give them time to debate it.
Yeah.
And so by skipping that step, he thought he was going to get away with something here, and it just didn't work out.
I mean, even if they timed it so that the CBO is releasing their report the day before, even the day before would have been an even bigger disaster. Say the CBO didn't release their findings on this thing, 22 million people losing their insurance, 15 million losing their insurance in the first year alone. Say that only came out on Wednesday and the vote was scheduled for Thursday. That would have been worse because the impact of that CBO report, when that thing dropped yesterday, you could feel the air being sucked out of Congress on the same day. I mean, it was such a disaster that I think it's actually better for Mitch McConnell that it came out on Monday than if it had come out on Wednesday, the day before. So the whole thing was just, it was just a failed plan from the outset. I don't know how you could actually look at the details of the law as someone who's been around as long as Mitch McConnell has and say, oh, this is going to be fine. People won't lose their insurance. People won't be outraged by the fact that millions and millions and millions of people will lose their insurance. And that's just the first big strike against the law in the first place, much less all of the other aspects of the CBO report and the things that we learned about the law subsequent to that.
I think he knew the contents of the bill and the consequences of those contents. I think he was thinking that not only would he have a lot of blind blanket Republican support, but that a lot of lawmakers wouldn't read it because they wouldn't have time to read it. He was hoping that most people wouldn't have time or take the time to read it. I just don't think he was expecting people to be watching this closely.
Yeah.
And I think he underestimated. He was smart in a lot of ways, or at least he was trying to learn from what had happened in the House.
Yeah.
And he, in the past, has been very effective at doing that job as majority leader or minority leader, as the case may be. And I just think he's lost it there. It didn't work out for him the way he'd hoped.
Well, I preface this with, of course, my ongoing caveat that I've been using for the last year or so, which of course comes from the Don and Mike show, which is don't get happy. I say this by saying don't get happy, but at the same time, I feel like I ought to use this for Mitch McConnell this week.
Done it again.
This is so dumb.
Yeah, McConnell, McCain, Trump. We can use that theme for all of them.
Oh, yeah, it's multi-purpose. But, I mean, today the Center for American Progress has come out with a breakdown, the state-by-state breakdown of how many people will lose insurance. Let's start with your state, Buzz. Let's start with Florida. Yeah. 2,086,000 people will lose their insurance in Florida alone because
I am one of them, by the
Trump
way.
I'm fairly certain that's true. And of course, the same goes for me. I mean, I'm in California. 2.4 million people will lose their insurance in California. But I don't know the per capita breakdown of this. But I bet if you were to look at this on a per capita basis as a percentage of the population, my hunch is that more people in red states will lose their insurance over people in blue states because
I can confirm that hunch. That is true. We know that to be true.
Oh, good, good. I'm spitballing that just by looking at the basic structure of Trump Care and knowing that red states will be the first, desperately so, to opt out of whatever they can opt out of when it comes to Obamacare. And that's what they're going to do. So that means if, for example, in the Senate version of Trump Care, they have the waivers for the essential health benefits. So that's, I mean, to me, that's one third of Obamacare
Right.
And the red state governors, red state legislatures will be the first to drop that, to say, hey, screw Obamacare. We're waiving that. We're waiving that part of Obamacare, which is, again, a full third of what Obamacare is all about, which is the consumer protections. All of those regulations saying insurance companies can't screw you over anymore. And they'll, of course, walk away from that, meaning that red state Trump voters. I mean, obviously, there are non-Trump voters in red states, too. But from a political point of view, Trump voters are essentially screwing themselves by supporting this guy and supporting this legislation, because they're going to be the first one to lose their benefits.
Yeah, by virtue of the fact that they live in those red states.
Exactly,
More that than who you, as you pointed out, it's more that than who you supported or didn't support in the election.
Yep.
We know that Medicaid covers half of all births in this country, that it covers 40% of all kids, 60% of all disabled kids, 75% of poor kids. All total, it covers 75 million Americans. That's enough people to populate more than half of our 50 states.
Wow.
That's how many people are affected, nay, devastated by this if it were to go into effect. And like you said, having more time, this was, we needed, oh, God, did we need a good piece of news. And thankfully, this came today. And I think this is just going to give time to build that momentum against this plan. And here we go again, Bob, after seven, 8 years of trying to repeal and replace, promising to repeal. When we get in power, oh boy, that sucker's gone. Day one, that thing's out of here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not quite working out that way, because as we've all learned recently, that we didn't know before when Hillary worked on it, healthcare is complicated.
It really is. You know, thank God for the naivete of Trump supporters. They believed that this was going to be really, really easy. They thought it was going to be so easy. And of course, Trump thought it was going to be super easy. Like, they're going to repeal Obamacare on day one. But I mean, little did they know that whatever the bumper sticker might promise, whatever Trump's ridiculous tweets might have promised, they get into this arena where, you know, they're trying to take away an entitlement, and you can't take away entitlements very easily in the United States.
Especially not once you've given them out. I mean, it's been pointed out the huge cost of Medicaid and what a huge chunk of our budget that is. And it's true. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
But it gets down to, do you or do you not think health care is the right of every American?
Yeah.
I happen to. I feel the same way about education. You know, and so I, you know, it doesn't surprise me that the opposition has occurred that has, because so many people are affected by this.
Yeah, absolutely. And so according to Jake Tapper, it looks like McConnell's going to change the legislation. I mean, he's going to look to change the bill and then get another CBO score, which maybe they can shave a couple thousand people off that list. But if they're actually planning to keep the bulk of this legislation intact and just sort of tweak around the edges, they're going to get the same result. I mean, I don't know what they're doing here. And at some point, they're going to have to entirely cut bait. I mean, I don't know how long they're going to continue to beat their faces against the wall.
I don't know, but they are beating their heads against the wall. It's like me wanting to fly. I can want to fly, but it isn't going to happen. And here's why they're not going to succeed with healthcare, because they cannot take healthcare away from that many people and please both moderate and conservative Republicans.
Exactly.
The conservatives want it to be meaner. Ted Cruz wants Rand Paul. They want it to be meaner. You know, and Susan Collins and others, the last couple of remaining good Republicans on the planet, you know, they don't want it to be that mean, that cruel. So they're never going to have a majority of Republicans even who support this. And of
course,
they don't have Democrat one.
Yeah. And again, even if this had passed in the Senate, by some miracle, Mitch McConnell was able to whip enough votes in the Senate to get this version of the legislation passed, then it would have gone to something called a conference committee. Because we already know, by the way, that Paul Ryan never would have brought the Senate version of the legislation up for a vote in the House. So this would have gone to a conference committee where they would have had to reconcile both the House version of Trump Care and the Senate version of Trump Care between members of the House and the members of the Senate. So they would have had to come up with what's called a conference report, which then both the House and the Senate would have had to vote on again. So there would have been not only a committee in the middle here after a Senate vote on this thing, which I don't think Donald Trump understands any of this. I don't think Donald Trump understands how a bill becomes a law in this case.
Wrong.
Which would explain the big celebration after the House bill passed. But, I mean, this would have gone to conference committee and then two more votes. And at any point along that trajectory, the whole thing could have exploded. And as anyone who was watching 2009 and watching as they were pushing Obamacare through this entire sausage-making process. Oh, my God. The number of times Obamacare almost died was staggering in that process. Yeah. I mean, I remember fighting for the public option, which I still believe, by the way, you know, if they're interested in reducing premiums, if Donald Trump wants to reduce premiums, here's the legislation you want to pass. Pass an amendment to Obamacare that puts in a public option. Premiums will... Either way, it's going to reduce premiums across the board because there's going to be so much competition to compete against a government healthcare program, which would have a very, very low overhead, probably something like 3%, where the other health insurance companies have overhead of like 10%. What was the cap? Obamacare has a cap on the amount of money that the insurers can spend on overhead.
That's true, and I don't recall what the cap was.
Yeah, and in fact, it was phasing in lower and lower amounts that they could actually spend on overhead, like commercials and CEO salaries and things like that. So, I mean, you have a public option, which is only 3% overhead, probably, you know, give or take. That's where, around what Medicare is. Medicare is a 3% overhead, which is how it can undercut all of the other insurers, forcing them to bring their premiums down. But he's not going to do that. And I don't know how I specifically got off into this tangent about the public option. But I mean, in terms of...
Well, because we were talking about how complicated it is. And you were talking about all the steps that... that Obamacare went through to become law, all the hearings and meetings and all the non-secret things that occurred in that process, the discussions and the details, exactly as you outlined. And they tried to cheat. They tried to skip that process this time and rush it through. And as you can see, it didn't happen. And in my view, it isn't going to happen.
Well, here's the stupidity of the. Here's another layer of the stupidity of this process. What they're going to end up with, Buzz, I mean, I'm just going to go out on a limb and predict this. What they'll end up doing is eventually passing something which they should have started in the first place, which is just a bill to fix the problems with the premiums. And again, the way they're going to arrive at that point is basically. What they should have done in the first place. And the way they arrive at that point is to pick out all of the poison pills that were inserted into Obamacare in the first place. Marco Rubio tossed something in there that screwed up the premiums. And then Donald Trump has himself been dragging his feet on paying premiums. So in effect, paying
anyone.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, all they got to do is go around to the various Republicans who were in the Senate in 2009 and 2010 and say, what did you do that sabotaged the premiums? Just let us know, because what we're going to do is repeal all those things so we can lower premiums and get fewer insurance companies to drop out of the individual marketplace.
What's the code? Yeah,
exactly. And that's all they knew. There, right there, that's the legislation. If they want to pass something quickly, all they need to do is find that out.
And here's the part that just makes you want to cry is they've been invited to do that for years. Yeah. Obama said from the beginning, this thing isn't perfect. I'm open to suggestions. They never made any suggestions. Yeah. They just bitched and moaned and promised to repeal and replace because, you know, he's black. He's Obama.
That's right.
I mean, ultimately, doesn't it seem like that's what it gets down to?
Yeah. I mean, and again, what we're talking about here is not all of Obamacare. We're talking about basically what amounts to a third of Obamacare, which is the marketplaces and the premiums in those marketplaces, the premiums on the individual marketplace. The other two-thirds of the law, which is, I mean, this is a staggering, obviously, knowing that they want to cut all kinds of taxes, which is why they're doing this. But they're meddling with two of the most successful parts of the law, which is the Medicaid expansion and the essential health benefits. And what they do is this legislation screws with both of those things that don't need to be screwed with. Unless you're interested in giving a gigantic $1 trillion tax break to rich people, which is what this actually does, on the backs of disabled people, of children, of older people, of people who have pre-existing, people with cancer.
While while giving a $600 million tax break to the rich.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going with $1 trillion, Buzz. That's I'm rounding up to $1 trillion.
It might be. It was 800 at one point. Yeah. The last I heard, maybe from the latest CBO report, it's higher. The last I'd heard, it was, but we know it's at least $600 billion in tax cuts for the very wealthiest Americans. Again, right. On the backs of children and old people and people in wheelchairs and all the rest of it.
I mean, again, here's what we know from the CBO. First of all, we just discovered today Planned Parenthood defunding would create thousands. And this Planned Parenthood defunding with the rollback of Medicaid spending. Several thousand unwanted pregnancies in the first year alone of defunding Planned Parenthood and rolling back Medicaid subsidies. Plus, Trump Care subsidies are too small to make the silver plans affordable for low-income people. And the plans it's trying to make affordable, the ones that cover 58% of expected costs, carry such huge deductibles. By the way, this is from Vox.com, which is pretty reliable on all this crap. Okay, huge deductibles that low-income Americans won't be able to buy these policies because they won't be able to afford to use them. So where they may be able to afford the premiums, possibly because of the subsidies that still remain, the deductibles are going to be so massive, you're not going to even want to bother because
it'll just be like not having insurance.
Exactly, yeah. Which is basically repealing Obamacare, which is basically going back to the way things were before Obamacare. Vox also wrote here, remember when Donald Trump bragged that, quote, I was the first and only potential GOP candidate to state there will be no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. Trump care savings come almost entirely from cuts from Medicaid. Spending on the program would decline in 2026 by 26% as compared to current law, according to the CBO. Yeah. CBO also directly contradicts Republicans who say this bill needs to pass because insurance markets are collapsing under Obamacare. Which is a big lie.
I'm so tired of hearing that because we know it's collapsing because Congress keeps, the Republicans keep jerking around with it.
It's exactly right. They've been sabotaging it since day one, since 2009.
Trump did say yesterday, I believe, well, then maybe we should just let it collapse on its own, which is to say maybe we'll give it a little push.
Yeah. I mean,
nice health care you got there. It'd be a shame if anything happened to it.
Exactly. And he is so goddamn insufferable on this. I mean, he was speaking, he did a rally, what was it, in Iowa last week?
Yes, where Cedar Rapids,
was,
right.
Yeah, where he was just tormenting people, where he was saying, wait, bye-bye, where I guess, what was it, Anthem Blue Cross dropped out of the individual marketplace in Ohio, right. And he was just going, bye-bye, bye-bye.
That's it, bye-bye, wave goodbye. What a mess.
I mean, it's just the most annoying, insufferable trolling.
It's like having a 6-year-old as president. It really, really is. I mean, oh, what horrible behavior. Just unbelievable. Not only is it not presidential, it's not adult.
Yeah, it's not.
You know? I predict if he hasn't already, he will be tweeting or saying, don't worry about it. We'll get the healthcare thing passed after the break.
Right, whatever.
Yeah, down the road.
Whatever, sure, Donald. But the thing is, just hearing him talk like that, I just, whenever I hear him talk now, or whenever I hear him or see him tweet, I just, and again, this is like so surfacey, but it's one of those things that just, it's like fingernails on a chalkboard to me. I don't know how anyone can look at this guy's behavior and say, that's a great leader. This is how leaders are supposed to talk and behave in public. You know, I get that you want someone, and I'm talking to Trumpers here, but people like the two people who support Donald Trump who might be accidentally listening to this show.
I don't know.
You think I'm overestimating the number?
Yeah, maybe.
Possibly, yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. Did you grow up figuring that leaders are supposed to behave the way he behaves? I mean, really, honestly, ask yourself.
Of course not. Yeah, I mean, you can put a monkey or a 6-year-old into a suit and tie and they look great, but that doesn't make them all grown up. You know, it doesn't make them adult human beings. They're still at the heart of it just a monkey or a 6-year-old.
So the CBO, which again is run by a Republican who was nominated by Republicans in Congress and approved
rightly
by Republicans.
Respected.
I mean, so the CBO reported that, like under the Affordable Care Act, the agency projects individual insurance markets will mostly be stable. So everything is going to be okay as far as Obamacare goes. Meanwhile, premiums for This is one of the most startling statistics that came out of the CBO report yesterday. Premiums for a 64-year-old with middle income go from $6,800 a year under the Affordable Care Act to $20,000 a year under
Yeah, see, I'm out. I'm out. Care. I mean, you're talking about me there. I'm 63. It could be argued that I have a pre-existing condition, although I feel great. I'm in the best of health. I am doing my best to take a personal responsibility, you know, for my lifestyle.
Yeah.
And you know, that I just that was a jab at some remarks that have been made about pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
Like 6-year-olds who are, you know, have heart conditions. You know, they should have taken better care of themselves.
Right. Yeah. Why don't they get jobs, Buzz? Yeah, I mean, right. You know, exactly. What I mean, those 6-year-olds with, you know, spinal conditions and or meningitis or leukemia, you know, why don't they get jobs, layabouts, takers?
I buy my insurance through the marketplace, and I pay $800 a month for it.
There you go.
For just me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of retired. I'm sort of living off money. I make a little money here and there, but mostly I'm living off the money that I made over the course of my career, my lifetime. And that's fine. Everything's fine. But it ranks me as middle income or maybe upper middle income.
That's right.
And I'm paying $800 a month. So because of that status, I do not qualify for government assistance in my health care. So it's $800. So if mine goes up like that, and I'm expecting it would, if this health care plan were to pass, I'd be out. I just have to say no insurance for me. Yep. And that would be the end of it. I mean, you know, that's true for a lot of other people. And again, this is not some liberal living off the government teat. This is somebody who pays his taxes.
That's right.
Doesn't get the tax break because I don't qualify for it. But I obey the law as it was or as it is, and I have my health insurance. And it's a little expensive, but the system is working. It's working. Don't take that away from me, and certainly don't take it away from people with cancer, people with wheelchairs, children. Right. They're looking. The Republicans who support this were really looking at the numbers, and they say, "Oh, we're just spending too much on Medicaid."
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't like anything with Obama's name on it, and that's a reason to just blow up the whole thing. And again, you know, Obama asked them time and again. Help me fix this. Make proposals. Help me come up. What do we need to tweak? And
because this is
nobody came forward.
Yeah, that's the grown-up thing to do, of course. That's the adult thing to do. And, of course, we don't have adults in leadership in Washington anymore. I mean, in terms of my own story, I mean, I'm paying $477 a month in California. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I move to Virginia, next year, I'll be paying even less. And I don't go through the, in fact, I do go through the marketplace because there was one year in which I did get a very, very small subsidy. And I've just stuck with the marketplace, even though I don't get subsidies anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm paying the full price. In fact, I could, in fact, just go to my insurer, which is a pretty big nonprofit insurer here in this area and also on the East Coast. And I would be paying the same premium. And I have not just one, but I have a couple pre-existing conditions that would, in fact, without Obamacare, I wasn't able to get insurance. And you know, indeed, there was one of the insurance companies endorsed TrumpCare this week, and it was Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. It was Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield that took my insurance away in 2005, and I was not able to get insurance back because I had a bike accident. I got hit by a car. I was riding my bike.
Right.
I had a back injury, and then wasn't able to get insurance until the passage of Obamacare in 2010. And so I rely on this, and I'm going to be one of those people who, even though the Senate version of TrumpCare doesn't meddle with pre-existing conditions like the House version does, it still creates an environment like we were talking about before, where the deductibles can be blasted as high as they want, where we're going to have a return to lifetime and annual limits with TrumpCare, where if something happens, you could actually lose your insurance before you've actually used much of any of it.
Well, if somebody says you can have coverage for pre-existing conditions, it'll only cost you $10 million. That is right. the same as saying you cannot have coverage for pre-existing conditions. So they found a way around taking it away from you. They made it too expensive to take so that it could be taken away from you.
Well, you know, Buzz, one of the things that's kept me healthy is eating right. And I do I do make sure to watch my diet. I spend a lot of time monitoring what I eat. But the problem is once I get to dinner time, I totally am stymied because I like a little bit of variety for dinner. I like to not eat the same thing every night.
Of course.
But I end up eating the same thing every night, which is
and whatever's easy, and it isn't always well balanced, and it isn't always fresh. And if you try to do something yourself, you buy too much stuff, and then you end up throwing stuff away. It's not fun that way.
Yeah. So of course I want variety, and of course Blue Apron brings me that variety. Yep. Who can afford to eat at a restaurant every night? There, you get some variety there, but it's not affordable.
We have health care to pay for.
That's right. We've got massive deductibles to pay for next year.
Right.
Or who wants to shop at high price stores just to get fresh natural ingredients? Not me. I've shopped in those stores and end up wasting so much good food. That's why I like Blue Apron, of course. It's America's number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service. It sends exactly what I need in exactly the right amounts and an easy recipe right to my door. Blue Apron has partnered with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranches across the United States. Their seafood.
I've had it. This is really fresh, healthy food. That has to be said.
Yeah.
I've had this stuff and it's great.
Yeah. And you check out the menu items happening right now. Warm smoked trout, fingerling potatoes, and asparagus salad with garlic croutons. Or there's spicy zucchini enchiladas. Oh, God, I can't wait to have these. With creamy lime and tomato rice, there's elote-style vegetable tostadas with summer squash, poblano peppers, and cilantro rice. That also sounds amazing. Or peach honey-glazed chicken with mashed sweet potatoes, collard greens, and Thai basil. Those are some summer meals right there. Try to get those at a restaurant, by the way, even from a specialty grocer for under $10 a person. Blue Apron has something for everyone because you can customize your preferences, and a new recipe just keeps coming, so you never get bored, and in fact, you get excited. It makes cooking actually fun. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free. They'll even pay for shipping because you listen to this podcast. Go to blueapron.com/BOBC. It feels good to make incredible, affordable meals at home when the food and recipes come from Blue Apron. That's blueapron.com/BOBC. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
It's a long-distance requested dedication to Buzz Burbank. I know that. You
know
love
what
Warren.
You're doing. Yeah. I love Warren Zevon.
That's exactly right.
You know what you're doing.
All right. The AMA.
Letterman used to quote, he was a friend with Warren Zevon, and Letterman came out one night on the late night NBC show, and his first words were about love. He said, you can't start it like a car, you can't stop it like a gun. Great, great lyrics from Warren Zevon, so much so that Letterman embraced them as well.
That's right. And Letterman has phenomenal good taste in music.
And Letterman was a DJ and had, he had a specific list of songs he wanted Paul to play during the breaks because he loved that music. But he had some tremendous artists on. You know, there's a collection out there of music from the Letterman show, but a lot of fun. But yeah, he and Warren Zevon used to, after the show, if he'd had Zevon on the show, afterward, they would rent a car and go driving illegally fast.
Shocker. If you go to YouTube and type in live on Letterman, you will get a variety of live performances that you will absolutely love. In fact, one of my favorites is Foo Fighters live on Letterman. Mm-hmm. They did a whole series of live songs on that show that were just absolutely fantastic. All right, so moving along. Back to cold, hard reality here of politics and the Trump era, the Trump crisis. Trump's favorite show, Fox and Friends.
Yes.
Spent some time this morning laughing at the notion of people dying from a lack of health care.
Sure.
Pretty much what you would expect from the Fox and Friends gang.
Nobody knows comedy better than Steve Doocy. I want to say that first off. I was on a show once with Steve Doocy, and I just hated this guy from before the moment he walked into the room.
Was that on Channel 4 and NBC?
No, I mean, I don't know. No, he was in town, I think, from Fox at the time.
Oh, okay.
I was working at CBS Radio, and he was on, and I just stared at him icily from across the counter for most of the time, so much so that he was concerned. I think he asked someone about it afterward, you know, am I going to be able to get out of here safely?
You know, he was the kicker guy on Channel 4 in Washington, D.C. for many,
before
many
that,
years.
Before that, he worked in my hometown of Wichita, Kansas, as a feature reporter, as the goofy, wacky feature reporter. Oh. So he began to work his way up from there, apparently.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, he was the guy who would come on after the weather on NBC News, on Channel 4 News in right. Washington, D.C. He would come on and do the... you know, the woman who has a potato chip that looks like Abraham Lincoln. He was that right. guy. And right. now he's the number one television influence for the president of the United States.
Well, you know, he's done well for himself. That's all I can say.
God help us all.
Here's a horrible show.
Yeah, here's the Fox and Friends people, the giggling couch tumors at Fox and Friends, laughing God. At people losing their health care.
You hear the 22 million, it's like, wow, that's a lot of people with no health care, right? Well, this is an opportunity for the people on the political left to use that number as a gigantic sledgehammer against the Republicans who are thinking about voting on it.
Yes, thank you. I think we will.
Right. And I have here that everyone will die. Do you have that number, too?
Eventually, yes.
I told you that. Yeah.
Also funny, all those people.
Yes. Yes, remember, the next time you go to the doctor, that the doctor is not your friend. The insurance company is your friend.
That's right. And don't That's you right. know, I mean, there are going to be thousands of people who are going to lose their health care coverage, disabled people, children, older people. Isn't that hilarious? Yeah, everyone loves that. It's so funny. It's so funny that people will...
Screw Anthem and all the other insurance companies. Back to, you know, what you were saying about the public option or single payer.
Yeah.
It's what we need to do is cut the insurance companies out of it completely.
Exactly.
That's how to solve it. Go to, and you know this in your heart and your soul every time you go to a doctor's office.
Yep.
You know who the bad guy is there. It's not your doctor. It's not you. It's the insurance company. They're the bad guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, Elizabeth Warren, who, it, as far as I'm concerned, is the front runner for 2020 on the Democratic side. Who knows who the Republican candidate's going to be in 2020? I hope it's not the current guy.
China!
But Elizabeth Warren came out and said today that the Democratic Party should adopt the progressive platform, which includes single-payer insurance.
Yeah.
Which I think is really smart, because one of the reasons is that I think, especially coming out of this debate, single-payer becomes more and more attractive to more and more people.
Well, see, now you raise an important point there, and it's really, in a sense, it's kind of what Bill Maher is saying when he goads Democrats on being such
b****s. Yeah.
You know, let's grow a pair and propose the things and fight for the things that we actually believe in. The response, I mean, a lot of times you have to transition. You can't do things suddenly. Obamacare was an excellent start, but we wimp out so often on those kinds of things. As I think Mar was saying, be proud of your beliefs. Be proud of what you want to accomplish. Don't, you know, meekly suggest them quietly from the corner. Say them loud and say them proud. And so I hope that the Democrats and the party and party leaders get gutsier and take some of that advice.
Yeah, in fact, this was Deval Patrick. He's the former governor of Massachusetts. This was Deval Patrick speaking at the 2008 Democratic National Convention.
And if we want to win elections in November and keep our country moving forward, if we want to earn the privilege to lead, my message is this. It's time for Democrats to grow a backbone and stand up for what we believe. Yep.
And it's now 2017.
I know. Yeah. Fast forward 9 years later.
And still in puberty.
It's the Democratic Party, the party of please don't hit me.
Yeah, I know. And it's, I mean, in a way, that's what makes us who we are. And in another way, it doesn't help us win. Somewhere there's a happier medium, I think. I think we could turn it up a notch or two and maybe be more effective.
There's a great speech by Ron Silver in an episode of The West Wing, and I believe it was season 3, where they're all trying to figure out how to not offend anybody. And Ron Silver gets up and says, listen, I want to be a part of a party that stands up for for what it believes in and doesn't cower in the corner saying, please don't hit me. And that's what the Democrats need to do. The Democrats have the added benefit of having science, math, facts, reality on its side. We also have the comedians. We also have the creative people. Why can't you bring in people like Aaron Sorkin to create messages for the Democratic establishment? Why can't you have people like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and their writers and their teams of people writing messages that and zingers that can be used across the country, things that could work as well in Oklahoma as they do in New York City? Yeah. Why can't that happen? Why can't we use our strengths here? And why is it that Democrats constantly have to dance around the issues, walk on eggshells? I was saying this, I went off in this speech recently, in fact, so I feel like I'm repeating myself. But when I saw that the Democrats were going to be fighting Trump care by doing an all-night talkathon, I think we talked about this, in fact, last Tuesday, Buzz.
Okay.
You know, it's the talkathon, great idea. Does anyone pay attention? I don't know. When the Republicans do a talkathon, is that something that the Republicans would do to win a debate?
I do recall that. First of all, the Democrats are in the minority. So aside from filing lawsuits, as they are doing, by the way, and bless them for it, there's really not much they can do. But I bless them for wanting to try, those who genuinely feel that way. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the effort. And they've even said, you know, part of this is because we feel like we have to do something.
Yeah.
And because we have no power here, it's really about all we can do. And so I appreciate that. And I'm glad that I wouldn't want them to abandon that, because then they'd be doing nothing at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at least, you know, if you accidentally turn on C-SPAN, you'll see it. And it gets reported for a few seconds on the news.
Yeah.
But if it does anything to keep debate alive, then maybe it's a good thing. Effective, not terribly. Necessary? Yeah, I think absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember when the Republicans were in the minority, I mean, what they would perpetually do, of course, they created new records for cloture motions and filibusters. But what they also did is they put anonymous holds on all kinds of judicial nominees. I mean, they used every parliamentary trick, and a lot of this has to do with Mitch McConnell. And in fact, Mitch McConnell is what I would consider to be an evil wizard, because yes. he knows everything there is to know about parliamentary procedure inside the Senate. He knows everything there is to know. Yeah,
he's good at being evil.
Yeah, he's really, really great at being evil, in fact. And he uses every tool in his handbag. And then so, you know, I think the Democrats could actually learn a little bit from that. But in fact, the Democrats, unlike the Republicans, as I said, have a basis in reality, have a basis in facts and science and math and just.
Well, maybe they need a greater basis in parliamentary procedure.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to pull off, because Chuck Schumer's seen these tricks before, so he surely must know how to do them.
Yeah.
But again, it's difficult being in the minority. In the end, there's not much you can do. And the best you can do is what they've been trying to do, which is trying to jam up the works.
I want to get into Russia here in a second, but one last thing on healthcare. The president tweeted something that was false. Shocker. Donald Trump lied on Twitter. How about that?
And you're leaving me disillusioned.
It wasn't just Donald Trump, though. This was tweeted out under the White House account.
Oh, I know.
And retweeted by Donald Trump. And it was a meme. The president's tweeting memes now.
Good,
and the
great.
Meme says, when Obamacare was signed, CBO estimated that 23 million would be covered in 2017. And it says here, they were off by 100%. Only 10.3 million people aren't covered. That, of course, is phenomenally wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong,
wrong,
wrong, wrong, wrong, wrong, wrong. The CBO here, this according to the CBO, overestimated enrollment in the exchanges by about 30%, not 100%.
Right.
That, by the way, they also underestimated Medicaid enrollment by about 14%. Mm-hmm. This is according to the Commonwealth Fund, which is a highly respected healthcare think tank. Again,
the CBO overestimated enrollment just by 30%, not 100%. I don't know right. where the hell they're getting this math, but it's entirely wrong. This is entirely a lie. And of course, they're kind of meddling with sort of like what they do with the deficit and the debt. They like to interchange those words, the deficit and the debt, and they like to deliberately confuse people about what is what.
Climate change and all the rest of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here they're confusing overall enrollment with just exchange enrollment. Now, what we have here is obviously legislation, Obamacare, that covers people not only through exchanges, but also through the Medicaid expansion. And collectively, we're talking about tens of millions of people who have gained insurance. And if you want to break it down to the marketplaces versus the Medicaid expansion, who cares? If you're covering people in a piece of legislation, who cares where that coverage really comes from?
How many people did Obamacare throw off of healthcare? Well, it didn't. It did just the opposite of that.
Yeah.
It added millions.
Well, what it did was Obamacare negatively impacted the very, very rich through tax increases, and some rich people couldn't use their doctor anymore.
Bob, when are rich people finally going to get a break?
I know. When is the world going to get its boot off the neck of rich people? But Trump Care does the opposite of that. Trump Care boots all the poor people and middle class people off their insurance in order to give a big tax break to the wealthiest 1%. So that's, do you want to know who to support on this whole thing? Just look at which piece of legislation does what. You know, John Cornyn was out tweeting the other day talking about, they were going back to the old trope about the number of pages in Obamacare.
Right.
And is it something like 20,000 pages? Well, this one, the Trump Care thing is in the hundreds of pages. Mm-hmm. I forget the total number of pages, but I mean, that's not something you should really be talking about as far as I'm concerned, because yeah, sure, it takes fewer pages to destroy something than it does to actually create something. And
yeah,
then,
and it's also less of a plan.
That's exactly right. Of course, it's less of a plan, and it's a far more damaging plan than you could ever possibly imagine. That's what the insane thing about this is, you know, and I was really hoping that they could get at least one obviously failed vote on the record, so we could have the names of the people who voted to boot 22 million people off of their insurance. We already have a roster of people, and this is the dumbest thing. I mean, really, Paul Ryan is left out flapping in the wind in all of this. Don't forget that Paul Ryan is now going to be a lightning rod in 2018. And it's not just because he's being challenged by this guy who's a steel worker and who's like basically reinventing what it means to be a Democrat, which is great. The name of the guy, I forget, is a steel worker in Wisconsin, and he's challenging Paul Ryan for a seat.
Yeah.
But not only is Paul Ryan dangling in the wind with his own seat, but as far as the Republicans in the House, they are all screwed because now they're all on record as having voted for something that is right. even worse than the Senate bill.
And that may not pass in the end. So now we've tagged Republican lawmakers in both the House and the Senate.
Yep.
And they become targets. It strikes me that they don't know this is going to hurt them. Or they think we'll be over it by November 2018. I don't think so. I hope I'm not wrong about that.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, I'm staggered by it. I mean, I don't know how anyone could possibly attach their name to something like this, knowing what it does and knowing what it doesn't do.
I guess they get so caught up in being a party man or woman that, they lose sight of it. They're getting pressure not just from constituents, but from party leaders in Congress. And they're trying to keep everybody happy. And in the course of that, they will destroy themselves. I really think that that's the cause of this sort of dodo's off the cliff thing, is that, they know they shouldn't, but they also feel obligated to follow the leader.
That's exactly right. Well, let's take one last break and then dig into the latest from stupid Watergate.
you're just like Jan Brady. Russia, Russia, Russia.
right after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Thank you, Buzz, and hello, Buzz.
Thank you, Bob. Hello.
Before the show started, we were talking about this CNN Russia story that got yanked, and
yeah,
Donald Trump is busily trolling CNN right now. The president is trolling a.
Yeah, I got to say this. I mean, I know I'm not saying anything that hasn't already been said, but really look at all the angles from which Donald Trump does what he does.
Yeah.
If it didn't, I wish I'd say I saw a little meme about this yesterday. I wish I'd saved it because it was about if it happened, I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. If I did it, I didn't do it on purpose. Or someone told me to. Yeah. There's a, you know, or even preemptively, he says, well, if such and so is going to happen, then it won't be my fault.
Yeah.
You know, so he even does preemptive, it's not my fault.
Yep.
You know, this guy, blame goes every direction from this guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hear occasionally from Donald Trump's friends and loyalists, including this guy who CNN wrote about. And ultimately retracted the story. You know, he said, no, they came after me because I'm a friend and loyal to Donald Trump. And I'm thinking to myself, how can he have any friends? I mean, with the way, because, and if you are Donald Trump's friend or you think you're Donald Trump's friend, he is going to screw you.
Yeah.
And so if, you know, it's only a temporary condition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is the party of personal responsibility.
Yes, well, yeah, the party of, perhaps, but not the president.
No, certainly not. And the irony is that Mike Pence was out this past weekend at the Mnuchin wedding,
right,
where he officiated Steve Mnuchin's third marriage, and said that the Trump care bill is all about personal responsibility, which the Republican yes. Party has shown none of. Recently, right. Especially the president. God, there's so many things to get into with Trump Russia. I don't know. We're
well,
be
I,
able to get
I just
to
want to say I know the Mnuchin marriage is going to go well because Trump vetted them.
Oh, Magoo, you done it again.
Wrong. But you know, there's a new. I want to get to this real quick, but there's a new James O'Keefe video mm-hmm. out there. James O'Keefe is this guy who's been convicted, in fact, of making fraudulent videos, selectively edited videos. Is
sure.
You might remember the Planned Parenthood videos, and of course, there are several different Planned Parenthood videos. There's a new video out in which James O'Keefe evidently talked to a producer at CNN, and the producer said something to the effect of. I was just going to say this. He allegedly said these things because it's very harshly edited. And we don't know if he actually meant these things. But what he said, ultimately, the CNN guy allegedly said that there's no evidence. There's no real evidence for Trump Russia, which even if he did say that, even if this wasn't selectively edited to make it sound like he was saying something that he didn't mean or saying something about Trump Russia or whatever. Even if he said all those things, it's actually in keeping with, I think, some elements of the far left. There are a lot of people on the far left, including Matt Taibbi, including Glenn Greenwald, who are going around saying that there's not a lot of evidence for Trump Russia, to which I say, what?
Yeah, right. You know, exactly.
What do you need? What do you require? I mean, there have been
hundreds, if not upward of 1,000 stories on Trump Russia with numerous sources.
Here's the problem with where we are right now. First of all, it's still early in the investigation.
Right.
The last we heard from one of the congressional committees is they felt they were about 20% into it. Who knows how far Robert Mueller is with as special counsel. I suspect he's even farther along, although there is a lot to unravel. What we have is a lot of circumstantial evidence. We don't have any smoking gun. And in fact, let me put it this way. Mm-hmm. We don't have a smoking gun. We just have a room full of gun smoke. There's so much smoke, we haven't found the gun yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we haven't found the smoking gun, but that doesn't mean, as you often hear from Trump supporters, that this has gone on for 7 or 9 months and they haven't found anything yet. Well, no, it's early in the investigation.
Yeah.
We've actually found quite a lot. We haven't found the smoking gun yet, but we're on our way.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there are going to be dozens of people in the Trump White House who are going to jail. I mean, this is, we're getting closer and closer to that fact, and we'll come back to that in a second.
Before you play the tape, I'm pretty good at hearing edits if they exist. I won't necessarily hear all of them, but I suspect I will hear them.
Well, I don't want to play the actual O'Keefe tape because...
Oh, I see.
I
thought you were setting it up.
No. I mean, I'm actually going to criticize RT for actually showing. Russia Today showed the video. And this is how effed up RT is. They not only showed the video, but this is how they led into the video. This is what they said just before actually showing a James O'Keefe video. James O'Keefe, serial fraudster.
Right.
This is what they said.
We're about to show you a clip, although RT's not yet been able to verify its authenticity.
RT's not yet been able to verify its authenticity.
And if Russia can't verify it, nobody can.
Yeah, but I mean, for God's sake, if you can't verify the authenticity of it, why the F are you showing the video?
Because it feeds the agenda. Remember, there are things Donald Trump has said or tweeted that he could have only learned from RT. there are instances. There's one instance for sure. I have to re-research it. But I know of at least one instance in which he said something he could not have known or said. Right. Had he not heard it specifically from RT, and RT, of course, also picked up by Breitbart, it all serves that same agenda, and it's Russia.
So here's what's been making me question my sanity over the last 3 or 4 days, Buzz.
Again.
Is this Trump's reaction to the Washington Post bombshell story that came out Friday, which you know, alleged that, one of the things that mentioned was Obama choked, you know, one of the, a former Obama White House official said Obama choked in the face of reports that Russia was attacking the election. This is prior to the election. And then Trump goes on to say, you know, goes on to tweet and attack Obama for not doing anything. He said that Obama didn't do anything.
He did nothing. He said Obama did nothing.
Obama did nothing.
In all caps, of course.
In all caps, right. And so Trump is accusing Barack Obama of not stopping an attack that Trump believes is a hoax.
And therefore being complicit.
And therefore is complicit. Yeah. Right. So now they're going to make a case. And Sean Hannity's already started it. Donald Trump obviously has already started it. Yeah. They're making a case now where they're going to lay this entire Trump-Russia thing at the feet of Barack Obama.
Well, they're going to try.
They're going to try.
And the Trump diehards, for as staunch as they are, as minority as they are, at what, 36% or less at this point? If it gets to 32, it's kind of over for Trump.
Jesus.
So he's already teetering on the edge. So he's just got these supporters who believe that. And this goes back to what we're talking about at the beginning of the segment. What I mentioned about finding ways to point responsibility at someone else. Prior to the Washington Post report, Trump said he said there's no evidence Russia didn't interfere, or there's no evidence it's a hoax, it's a made up story, it's fake news.
Mm-hmm.
But once that report came out, suddenly to Donald Trump it was real. And why was it suddenly real? What caused Donald Trump to change his mind and decide from it wasn't real to it was real? Because now, suddenly, thanks to the Washington Post, he thought he had someone else to blame it on, namely Obama. Now, of course, he's stupid and he can't get anything right. So, you know, that's not what one draws from the article. One draws just the opposite conclusion. If one reads the entire Washington Post article, there were a number of things he did, and there were reasons for the things that he did and reasons for the things that he did not do. But he clearly looked at it, studied it, saw a lot, did a lot. The person who hasn't done anything about Russia's interference with our election is the Trump administration.
That's right.
Now, some of the work that Obama ordered continues even during and perhaps without even the knowledge of the Trump administration.
Yep.
But that work continues. So Obama, we could talk about what Obama did, but he did quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he did. There were, I think, three main actions that Obama took. And again, the rest of what Obama did, if he did anything else, we may never know about because it's a matter of national security.
Right.
These are covert operations. And it's amazing that we even know about the three things. I mean, the first thing, obviously, Obama laid down new sanctions on Russia.
That's one of the things, yeah.
Because of the attack. Obama also booted the Russians out of two compounds, one in New York and another in Maryland, that were being used by the Russians as hubs for spying, where a lot of Russian spies were based in these compounds, and they were doing a lot of spying inside the United States on Americans from these compounds. Barack Obama booted those people out of the compounds. And guess who invited the Russians back into those compounds?
Oh, sure. Yeah,
Donald Trump.
Because he thought we might get better relations with the Russians, or so he said.
Yeah.
You know, and Obama, by the way, also, his Justice Department, his State Department, shut down visas for Russians who, there was a flood. They noticed a spike in the number of Russians applying for technical visas to come do tech work, wink, wink, in the United States, likely at those two compounds that Obama shut down. And the Obama administration shut down the granting of those visas to tech people. And this spike occurred just coincidentally, Bob, just before the election.
Yeah, shocker.
But that was another action taken. And then the third and final one, and I know you were going to get to, which it was planting the
digital
viral bombs, digital bombs in Russian computers to be set off. Now, how much of that's been accomplished, we don't know.
Yeah.
But Obama ordered that work to take place. It began immediately, and as far as I know, it continues at this moment, whether with the knowledge or blessing of the Trump administration or not. Within the intelligence community, that work continues. Again, bless him for doing that.
Yeah, in fact, that's four things. I said there were three things that Obama did. We've actually named four.
Yeah, when you add the visas in, that makes a fourth thing. But yeah, those are the big four. Yeah.
Yeah, and exactly. And the thing with the digital bombs, basically, Obama authorized the planting of malware inside Russian infrastructure that could be detonated whenever there was a need to detonate it. So basically, he's essentially aiming a gun at Vladimir Putin's head and saying, try something else and I'll pull the trigger.
Those are the four nothings that Obama did in response to. Now tell me, Bob, because I know you have that list in front of you, what's Trump done about Russian meddling since he took office on January 20th?
Exactly. Nothing.
Nothing.
He's done nothing. And in fact, you mentioned the digital bombs, which is how the Washington Post is kind of describing them.
Right.
This was set up by Obama, but it actually requires Donald Trump to authorize the continuation of that policy.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. It was my understanding that the work continued with or without the blessing of the administration. Because I even have trouble with that, because I know what these intelligence, we've sort of learned how these intelligence folks work, and I think if they make up their mind they're going to investigate something.
Yeah.
You can tell them not to, but it's just like the detectives on a TV show. You know they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
right.
And you know how that story turns out. But again, and then the Post, this is not made up stuff, the Post had 36 sources.
36 sources, yeah.
Three dozen past and current intelligence officials provided or corroborated or confirmed this reporting. And again, this is the nothing that Trump, and of course his people believe it. But hopefully the word gets out to most people eventually that Obama did quite a lot. There are even those within the Obama White House who said he could have done more.
Yeah.
Sure, he could have, but there were, again, reasons for not doing that. First of all, the most frightening thing is that Putin has control, or, well, has access already to voter registration machines in at least 21 states, maybe 39, maybe 4 out of 5 of our states have already been invaded in some way. And unless those are cleaned and defended, they know how to get in again and again and again. So this is an ongoing attack in that respect. Obama knew that if he made too big a deal out of this, a couple of things would happen. Putin would escalate the attack on the United States. That would, and just before the election, the presidential election, that was no time to be provoking that. So it would have been a matter of timing as well. Clinton could have taken over that from there. And he also knew that it would be, there would be backlash for what would seem like a very political move in Hillary's favor just before the election.
Yep.
So they were a little bit afraid of that as well.
Yeah, and you know what else? There's so many aspects to all of this. But, I mean, I think the main one is that Obama could have done more to stop Putin from doing what he was doing.
Right.
But how does that happen when it's already the cat's out of the bag at that point?
Yeah.
By the time Obama learned from the intelligence community in August of 2016, not even a year ago, that Putin was doing this, it was already underway. I mean, they had their talons into social media. They were delivering fake news all over the place. They had already meddled. What I think of that, they had already meddled in the primaries, in the Democratic primaries, quite heavily, and we don't know the full extent of how they meddled in the Republican primaries, but I do know that, you know, they already sowed discord on the Democratic side by pissing off Bernie Sanders supporters with using fake news and targeting them, possibly meddling with voter registration.
But bless his heart, Obama's a Democrat, and he didn't want to seem to be political.
Yeah.
he didn't think that anything he did would... he didn't think the Russian meddling would affect the outcome of the election anyway. So, you know, he did less instead of more.
Well, the other question I have is why everyone's accepting the veracity of these special elections that we've had lately. And I don't need to get too conspiratorial right at the end of the show.
Yeah.
But I think we need to look at, you know, the Georgia special election, the South Carolina special election, and not blindly accept it as being on the level. We don't know. I mean, we don't know if there was any interference one way or another.
And we think we're still vulnerable for 2018.
Yeah.
I have a theory about these recent special elections that we can talk about in the after show.
Oh, good. Okay, good, good. Yeah, the after party is coming up next. We're gonna keep talking. We're going really long today, but that's okay. Notify the affiliates we're running late. we're going to talk about more Trump. We're going to talk about Jared Kushner during the... after party here coming up. Not the after party, but the post-mortem show.
Right.
The after party doesn't happen until Friday.
I made you do that.
No, I mean, that shows you how desperate I am for the weekend already. It's only Tuesday. By the way, programming note, no show next Tuesday because of 4th of July. I just want to mention that too. Post-mortem show coming up. Sign up at patreon.com/Bob and Chaz or just click the Patreon link at bobsuska.com. If you sign up for $5 a month, you get the post-mortem show. If you sign up at $10 a month, you get the post-mortem show plus the after party. $15 a month gets you all that crap plus a commercial-free, unbleeped version of this show. And that's it.